It's Marketplace Tech for Tuesday, September 6th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Tomorrow in Rio, the Paralympics get underway. One of the competitors, German cyclist Denise Schindler, will be using the first ever completely 3D printed prosthetic used in the competition. The printer that made it will set you back at least $100,000. The prosthetic itself, though, is cheap, $250. Lead designer on the project is Paul Sohi from the company Autodesk, which makes software for industrial 3D printing design. Paul, thanks for chatting. Can you describe Denise's artificial limb to me?
She is missing her lower right leg, so below the knee.
Uh-huh.
And the prosthetic doesn't look like a leg at all. Like, it's very specifically designed for competitive cycling. As soon as you get down below her residual limb, it suddenly gets to a very, very thin shape. So the way that the prosthetic itself connects to the bicycle is just like a standard cycling cleat that you would attach to a cycling shoe.
What's the process like of the actual printing? Are you using, like, are you like feeding giant plastic sticks into this thing and they get melted down? Or is it a bag of goo? How does it work?
You basically have a giant spool of plastic. So you may have seen like desktop machines that makers and tinkerers use to prototype with.
Sure.
And it's the same process, but just on an industrial scale.
Do most teams have access to this kind of tech? Yeah, I mean, a $100,000 printer, that sounds pretty pricey.
Well, the machine itself is expensive, but the material cost is extremely cheap. So we can produce a prosthetic just under $250 with all of the material.
Which is actually cheaper than other ways that you might create one of these things, right?
Oh, hugely, yeah. The traditional method is estimated around $12,000. So even when you include labor time, just the difference between this method and the traditional method is massive.
What are the other advantages of 3D printing this prosthetic?
There's quite a few. By using 3D printing, we can be intelligent with the skin thickness. So around Denise's residual limb, there are areas that are particularly painful for her and other areas where it's okay. So when we're considering the transfer of power from her body into the bicycle, we can create areas that are much thinner where it's possible for Denise to have a little bit of flex inside of it, so it's a little bit more comfortable. And then other areas where it's far more rigid, so that transfer of power is going to always be, you know, at its optimum.
Paul Sohi is a product designer with Autodesk. He worked on a prosthetic that is being used by a Paralympian on the German team in the Paralympics. Paul, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you want to get a closer look at the first fully 3D printed prosthetic being used in the Paralympics, it looks kind of like an airplane wing. You can check out our Twitter account. We are at Marketplace Tech. All this week, we are celebrating the 50th birthday of Star Trek. The franchise has had a huge influence on techies, the gadgets they've designed, the world, nay, universe they have imagined. So set your phasers to listen. Today's guest comes from a place where a lot of big Star Trek fans end up, NASA. David Batchelor is an aerospace technologist at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. He also wrote an extensive piece on the science of Star Trek, what's realistic, what's not. David, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on the program.
The famous Star Trek communicator.
No, years ago, they put out a Christmas ornament.
And you brought it with you.
Yeah, you open it up, and that's what it does. And also, there's...
Never mind about me. Protect my ship.
That is great. Over the years, do you think that the show has gotten more scientifically sound or less?
The different shows treated science to greater and lesser degrees of carefulness. And like the Next Generation show was trying to be even more careful than the original Star Trek was. And the Voyager spent a lot of time on science details. There were, of course, some unexpected things that Star Trek didn't predict. Like they didn't predict that there would be networks of computers like the Internet.
They missed the Internet.
Yeah. And they didn't realize there would be this social media, you know, uniting us all, but also enabling dangerous things like recruitment of terrorists and stuff.
Or just trolling or, yeah. You've been at NASA for 28 years, right? Did the show influence you and some of your colleagues at NASA to pursue the career that you did, but also do some of the work that you've done there at all?
Yes, I and a lot of the acquaintances I have at NASA are definitely Star Trek fans and inspired by what we saw in Star Trek. The missions that I get to work on all are very Star Trek-y. We're about to launch something called OSIRIS-REx to visit an asteroid and get a sample and bring it back. I got to work a little bit on the radiation forecasting for that.
What's a radiation forecast? Can you explain that?
The sun has a strong solar flare. A lot of high-energy particles come into the area of the Earth, and they can strike our electronic devices and make them malfunction. So we have to prepare by shielding the parts with metal. And so I sort of give a forecast. What kind of shielding do you need?
You're the shield guy.
Yes, yes.
Of the things that we don't have yet, what is the thing that you want?
I'd like to have an android that would do what needs to be done. I just went through a lot of yard work. And if I didn't have to personally lift all those bags of mulch and rocks, that would help.
David Batchelor is aerospace technologist at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. He wrote an extensive piece on the science of Star Trek. David, it was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Our series, by the way, is produced thanks to Marketplacer and Star Trek fan Levi Sharp. You can find all of this week's stuff, GIFs, extended interviews, and more at marketplacetech.org. Also, yes, Apple will have a big event tomorrow. Maybe we'll get an iPhone 7. Maybe we will get an Apple Watch 2. We will definitely get you the news when it all goes down. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.